Hello, Kieran here. I'm doing this at the beginning because people tend to switch off at the end plugs, and this is important. The partner of our good friend and frequent guest, Eamon Bell, recently lost their home in the Tennessee tornado. Their friend has set up a GoFundMe to try to help out, which can be found at bit.ly/GFMD. That's bit.ly/GFMD. We know this is an already expensive time, but if you have a few spare pennies to throw their way, that would be awesome. And you're obviously awesome people. Thank you for listening. Here's our episode. Hello and welcome to episode 85 of Must See Matches. I am Kieran Lefort, and joining me is the egg-sucking dog who refuses to quit, the man behind Must See Matches, Mark Buckledy. Mark, how are you doing?
Yeah, no, I'm good. And you?
Not so bad. Got over flu. I think I've got rid of the sexy flu voice I had on the Joseph show when we recorded that. But I'm not sneezing and coughing all over the place and feeling like my limbs want to fall off, which is lovely. We are in a new bracket. This is the first match that finished joint 18th in terms of nominations, the first of three. So we don't actually have that many matches left to go. We're speeding through all these now, it feels like. And back to finish what he kind of started, where we talked about the match that led to the angle that eventually led to this match. The CEO of WXW, Felix Kohlenberg, is back. Felix, how are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for having me back. I'm very excited about it. I'm just coming back from vacation, so perfect timing to talk some wrestling now. So really looking forward to being back here.
We realized off air it was a whole year since we recorded, like almost exactly a year since we recorded the show that begat this one. I didn't think it was that long. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
I kept waiting for the invitation, so it's all good.
Right person for the right match. That's how we do this. So we are going to be talking about Ric Flair versus Terry Funk, the I Quit match from Clash of the Champions 9, New York Knockout in Troy, New York, November the 15th, 1989. I believe, Mark, this is the last time we see either of these men.
It is. And the other interesting thing about these men, both of them had matches nominated in four different decades.
Ah.
So they both had matches nominated in the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, and the 2000s. Although Ric Flair's 2000 match was against Shawn Michaels, and Terry Funk's was a six-man tag involving Beulah McGillicuddy.
Probably better than the other way around. The match that Felix was here for before was the final Ric Flair versus Rick Steamboat match in May 1989, and Terry Funk attacked Flair after that. Actually, I was going to ask, Felix, did you do any additional homework? Did you watch any of the TV stuff leading into this?
I had a 9-hour flight, so I watched some of the TV. I watched some of the extra matches in between, so we're good to go, yeah. I started rewatching from the angle onwards.
Sure, sure. I thought 6 months of TV was going to be a lot to kind of cram in, and that 1 month in the period this took place in, there wasn't the 1 month TV build to the pay-per-view type thing that you get today. So 1 month wasn't going to be enough. And I'm like, what I want to hit is all the major landmarks in between. And that's when I remembered I have a best of Terry Funk set. So I watched everything essentially that Terry Funk did between May and November. And that totals about 4 hours. So that was a good, like a decent amount to watch. I'm not going to hit all of it, but I will say I had so much fun watching him carry this. So he gives Flair the pile driver after the Steamboat match. Flair goes off TV with an injury, selling the neck injury. And so Terry Funk has to carry this angle. And boy, does he carry it. Like, even the first interview, he goes on TV to explain himself. He says when they shook hands, he saw a hateful gleam in Flair's eyes and felt Flair's hand tighten around his. So he knew Rick was going to try something and made sure he got in first. He then finishes it by saying Flair is faking his injury and he's just a coward. May the 20th, we get the only ever match between Terry Funk and Eddie Guerrero. Eddie is 2.5 years in and he's really green. Yeah, it's really funny. Funk is determined to like make something out of him. He can definitely see something in this kid. You can unfortunately kind of see the seams. You can see Terry kind of like beckoning him on to do stuff. But Eddie gets to shine. Like he gets to drop kick him. He gets to flip around all over the place. He gets to avoid Funk strikes. He gets to do like flips off the top rope and stuff to avoid things. There's a point where Funk grabs hold of him and gives him a giant swing in both directions without putting him down in the middle. He gets a little bit of shine on Funk after Funk like clotheslines the ring post, but like eventually Funk pile drives him on the floor and then pins him in the ring. It's like it's a fascinating curio that Terry, like, who's kind of like on top of the business, is still doing what he can to drag someone new and young up. And it's really interesting to see like Eddie Guerrero that unpolished.
Well, you talk about that. It's like the matches that Funk had nominated. It was matches against Anita, Stan Hansen, Jumbo Saruta, Mick Foley, who were either guys he trained or guys he influenced. So that kind of shows that he was willing to help guys on the come up and sort of give them the rub.
I mean, even his squash matches were never really squash matches. There always something happened in between. Yeah. There was always some excitement going on. And even the lower level guys, like Lady, they always got something in, like, to make it work and being different than the regular late 80s TV style squash match. Really.
Into June, there's a segment where Funk brings out a Ric Flair impersonator whose name graphic reads RICKFLAIRE. It's this skinny dork in a wig, and Funk gets him to quote unquote admit that there's nothing wrong with his neck and the real problems are stomach ache because he's got no guts and a back issue because of the yellow streak that's painted up it. And Funk pulls the guy's robe off to show the yellow streak he's painted down this guy's spine. Sting, who is the TV champion, comes out to speak up for Flair, and he and Funk just end up fighting all over the building. The crowd goes crazy and both of them lay into some jobbers who come out to try and break it up. Terry Funk was going to fight everybody at the top of this card, including June the 14th, Ricky Steamboat at Clash 7. So Funk is trying to get into the top 10 contenders so he can get a title shot against Ric Flair. Part of his argument is Rick Steiner is in the top 10 and he's injured. Why can't I just have his place? And so he's now considered ranked, but Steamboat is ranked higher, so they have a match on the Clash. One of the things I noticed in this was Rick Steamboat might have delivered the best pro wrestling dropkick I've ever seen.
Really?
He gets both feet on Funk's cheek, but has enough bend in his legs to just push him away. So it makes clear contact, but Funk doesn't get hurt at all. But of course, he flails around and bumps for it. But yeah, he was not in danger of getting his head kicked off. It was this brilliant like push drop kick. I loved it. This is sort of just a fight with some wrestling moves in it. It's slightly less good than you remember it being, I think. And ends in a disqualification when Funk grabs the mic from the commentary desk and bashes Steamboat with it for the DQ. And then just because more things need to happen, Lex Luger comes out and turns heel. Yeah.
I mean, it's Lex Luger. If it's a year ending with a number, he's turning.
Yeah, I naturally kind of, apart from like the Stars and Stripes era, I naturally think of Lex Luger as a heel anyway. He's just always occupies that position in my head. What else do we get? Funk introduces the branding iron to things as we go into July. Sting squashes the tremendously named Snake Brown, who has shown up on this podcast before. Snake Brown from out of town. Sting squashes him in seconds, and then Funk runs out and bloodies him with the branding iron to the point where Turner feels the need to put a big censored sign over Sting's face. Crowd were going crazy for this. And then Funk comes out for his match, which is just a squash with a guy called Ricky Santana. And that, rather than just being a squash match, is this wild brawl all over the place with the crowd constantly chanting, "We want Sting."
Yeah.
So he's had a fight with Steamboat. He has tried to get this Eddie Guerrero kid over. He is getting people behind Sting in a match Sting isn't even in.
Mm.
And he's pushing his own thing with Ric Flair.
Yeah.
So Flair comes back. He has a press conference confirming that he is still the world champion. He will return to the ring and he will defend against Funk at Great American Bash on July the 23rd. On the 8th, Funk goes on the Danger Zone with Paulie Dangerously wearing the hot t-shirt of the summer of 1989, the Batman logo movie t-shirt. I remember that thing being everywhere. Funk rants and raves. We've shown him attacking Flair. And he then maniacally leads the crowd in a chant of "We want Flair," which he turns into "I want Flair." Not them, not you, but me. I want Ric Flair. The Bash match should have been on this list.
It's got nominated. It did get nominated.
It did get nominated. Good. Yeah. It's so good. It's just this. It's all action. It's barely controlled. They just fight all over the place. It should go on this list for the brawl afterwards alone. The version I have cuts off after 10 minutes of the brawl, but I'm pretty sure it went another... I've seen a version where it goes another 10. This is the one I mentioned to you recently, Mark, where poor Jim Ross and Bob Caudle are trying to wrap up the show, and Flair and Muta just come past in the back of the shot, like scrapping and trying to get each other in a headlock. There's chairs and branding irons getting thrown everywhere. Yeah. It's so good. It's just wild stuff.
It's one of the wildest angles that still worked without being really awkward. I think it's just tremendous. Like, I think the match is kind of under it because everybody talks about the I Quit, but it's at least on par with the I Quit match we're going to talk about, I would say. Because maybe I love it even more, but like the whole angle afterwards makes it so good and rememberable in the end. Like, it's great because they never stop, and once you think they stop, they keep continuing. And they're all four on the same level, so it's not like just the heels getting beaten up or anything.
Yeah, yeah. I remember Alan Forel did a show with Wrestling Observer's Mike Sempervivi, who was there live as a kid. Yeah, and he said, like, seeing it live was wild. Like, just when you think they're done, two heads and some fists would, like, pop out of the crowd somewhere and start going at it again. Yeah, tremendous, tremendous stuff. Part of my favourite part of this build are two alleged squash matches that Terry Funk has with Scott Hall. Yes, that Scott Hall, with his lovely curly mullet and big moustache. The first one takes place in Amarillo. Ooh. And the crowd somehow goes from booing Funk out of the building to cheering him and hugging him when he wins. Much like the Guerrero match, Funk gives him everything, including near falls, before putting him away with the pile driver. They do a rematch it's aired on August the 19th. I don't know where and when it was taped. This one I love to bits. So the backbone of it is that it doesn't matter what Terry Funk does, he can't break this wrist lock that Scott Hall has got him in.
Ooh.
Until he sends them both crashing backwards over the top rope. And he comes back in by punishing Hall's neck, but Hall gets out the pile driver and looks to have it won after his bulldog that he got to use in the first match and hurt Funk. But Funk kind of rolls him over into the end of a back suplex position, pushes his feet on the ropes, and has Gary Hart's help to get the pin. And then afterwards, Hall gets to body slam Funk over the top rope, but Funk comes back in, hits him with the branding iron from behind. This was a masterclass in heel work. He made this younger, lesser guy look like he might have a chance. He let him get stuff on him, but he kept his heat. It was fantastic. They do it all in 7 minutes. It's beautiful, beautiful stuff. Funk does a great promo where he makes a plea with the audience to protect endangered species, and he lists them off as whales, wolves, polar bears, whooping cranes, and most especially the Funker, which is what he is, and there's just one of him, so he's the most endangered of them all. He says he took Flair's pride and honour at the Bash, and the only thing he didn't get was the title. There is, August the 4th, a match that sounds way better on paper than it actually was. Terry Funk and Terry Gordy against Sting and Steve Williams. Unfortunately, Sting is green. Steve Williams is green.
Yeah.
The Terrys are trying very hard, But the most important, the most notable thing about this match is, have you ever seen the gif of the belly slapping fan?
What?
I am going to put this clip online when we release this. Gordy and Funk leave the ring, and this guy with a comb over, moustache, glasses, and a paunch comes over, pulls his shirt up, and starts slapping his belly at the heels. He's mostly pointing at Gordy. I think he's trying to be like, Gordy's fat, Gordy's fat. And then they cut away to the wide, and you could just hear him go, "Fuck you all!"
Yeah, it seems like the whole summer with Terry Funk, Doug Dillinger having the hardest work ever, trying to stay away from Terry Brawling all over. And then even people are like, this moment was tremendous.
If you hire Terry Funk, you should know what you get. September the 12th is Clash the 8th. Clash the 8th, like Henry the 8th? No, Clash of the Champions 8. Flair and Sting have beaten Dick Slater and the Great Muta by DQ. And then here comes Terry Funk with his arm in a huge cast because he'd had a legit staph infection and actually came close to needing his arm amputated.
Jesus Christ.
Yes, he had been out of the hospital like 3 days. that's why Dick Slater is in his spot in the main event. Funk had been advertised. It was supposed to be Sting and Flair against Muta and Funk. Yeah. Anyway, Terry Funk hits the ring and tries to suffocate Ric Flair with a plastic bag.
Jesus.
I thought this is an angle you couldn't do today. Not for censorship reasons, but how hard is it to get a plastic bag now? And could you try and kill someone with a paper bag or a bag for life from the supermarket?
I was at a Progress show and they tried to do a waterboarding angle, but no one knew what waterboarding actually was, so it got no heat.
Just a man having an awkward drink. September the 16th, Jim Ross reads a very smug Terry Funk a telegram from Jim Herd, indefinitely suspending him and fining him $100,000 for the bag attack. Funk pulls the bandages off his arm to show his operation scar, and he claims that Flair should be suspended because Flair did this. Flair injured my arm. He says he had intent behind the attack and he'd do it again, but don't you kids ever do anything like that. So he's clearly been asked to, like, go on air and apologize, but does it in his own very special Terry Funk way.
Yeah.
I love how Terry in that promo was said that he's, how long is indefinitely? How long is indefinitely, JR?
Yes.
How long is that? Tell me.
Yeah.
And then I think Gary Hart keeps reading and kind of makes up there's a $100,000 fine on top of that, but Jim Ross never mentioned. Gary Hart is like 2 minutes ago. Oh, there's another fine, $100,000.
It wasn't actually a fine, it was just Gary Hart pocketing the money for himself.
On September 30th, Gordon Solie reports that Ric Flair has successfully lobbied the NWA to lift Funk's suspension and has paid the fine himself. And then he tries to pop a house by saying they will clash, and did, in an I Quit match in the Omni on October the 8th. What he doesn't tell you is they had a week of regular matches around the Northeast in the last week of September, including one 2 days before this at the same venue as Clash 9.
What?
Yep. Yep, September 28th, Ric Flair versus Terry Funk for the NWA title in this building in Troy, New York. And then they had two Texas death matches on the 6th and 7th of October. On the October 14th, in a hell of a shirt, a lovely blue shirt with white tassels all over it, he does a promo saying how happy it is that Ole Anderson is Flair and Sting's quote-unquote designated Terminator for the Halloween Havoc Thunderdome cage match. I'll explain all this in a minute, Mark. You're looking at me with a very confused expression. He says I've got a quote here. He says, Ole Anderson is, quote, a compassionateless individual. Gary Hart claims that Muta would rather kill himself than quit. Sanitizing that from something quite racist, he said.
Jesus Christ.
And he says he would never throw in the towel for Terry Funk. And Funk ends this by repeatedly shouting, burn the towel, burn the towel. So this is the lead up to Flair and Sting versus Funk and Muta. Halloween Havoc, October 28th, Thunderdome cage match. Several things I've forgotten about this. Bruno Sammartino is the referee. There are no pinfalls, no submissions, no disqualifications, no countouts. The only way to win is for your designated Terminator, who is on the floor inside the cage, because the Thunderdome cage encompasses some floor as well, mm-hmm. is to throw their towel into the ring to signify that someone from their team has given up. This is another one that's less good than you remember it. It's one of those infuriating anything goes but you have to make a tag matches that drive me up the wall. If there's no DQ, just fucking fight.
Which they started doing after like 8 or 9 yeah. minutes. I mean, they yeah. started out with the tags and Bruno trying to keep them tagging. Yeah. But I think they kind of realized that doesn't make sense. We have to fight. And then yeah. they tried to fight. Yeah. And it all went, not so good.
Also, the cage is apparently electrified, which... Jim Ross tries to sell as it's the top part of the cage that is electrified so they can't get out, but everybody just climbs all the way up there anyway and nobody does the old Devon Dudley on the side of the cage thing.
Muto the best... got a pretty quick one. So.
The best part of this is probably they've got some like cheap Halloween crap around the top and some of it catches fire as the cage comes down. So in a quite a famous clip, the two referees on the outside can't quite put it out, so Muta runs up the inside oh. of the cage and mists the fire to put it out, and it works.
Yeah, now that is... Yeah,
it's very, very cool. Anyhow, the finish is, of course, classic NWA mess. Muta gets crotchety, goes for a moonsault. Flair puts the figure four on Funk while Sting repeatedly splashes Terry from the top rope. Muta tries to chop Bruno but gets punched in the face. Gary Hart tries to get in the ring but Ole cuts him off, punching him so hard Gary Hart's towel flies out of his hand. Bruno sees it and calls the match for the babyface.
Oh, that is...
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Well, was Dusty in charge and was he just having an idea?
Ric Flair's booker at this point. Jeez. I do believe. They were kind of in a hole because like Funk's supposed to be like the challenger for the title. Muta is undefeated in the NWA. I think the TV title is currently held up, or did they sort that out in September? No, so Muta is also the TV champion at this point. Flair is the world champion and Sting is the babyface on the rise. So it's the people you want to see fight, but
no one can afford to lose.
Promotion doesn't want anybody to lose. Yeah, exactly.
It's like Terry doesn't get any big win in the whole run. Everyone he beats is just like Eddie or Scott Hall, but he never really gets any big win.
No.
Steamboat, he cannot beat Sting, he cannot beat Flair, even with cheating, it never works.
November the 4th. Funk does an interview putting Flair over as a tough man. He puts over the I quit stip and adds an additional one that the loser must shake the winner's hand and tell him he respects him. He also very quietly slips in here something that has gone largely unnoticed since 1989. This match is non-title.
What?
Yeah. The belt wasn't on the line in the match you watched.
What? I mean, I didn't see, like, they didn't mention it for the title. I didn't see a title get held up, but I just assumed it's because the footage I watched, which didn't have the entrances, was just clipped out.
Yeah.
It's bigger than the title, they say. It's about the integrity and the love for pro wrestling.
Yeah, and they do. So the next week is November the 11th. It's Funk's Grill, which is Funk's interview segment with Ric Flair, live by satellite as the guest, or probably more likely on the other side of the room, because I think he starts to spill onto Funk's mic when they yell later on. Funk opens with a story that ends in a pun that would make even Mark groan. It is a story about a head that has a wish. He wishes for a miracle, and the miracle is he gets turned into a tomato, and the moral of the story is quit while you're ahead. There we go. In a roundabout way, Terry Funk claims that Ric Flair is going to shit himself in the ring during the I Quit match, and they put over that this one isn't about the title, it's about personal pride. Flair claims that 50 million people will be watching, and if they'd done that rating, Vince McMahon would be in the mud immediately. So that is it, as goes to the build. As I said, I only watch, I don't know what promos Flair did for this. I only saw the Terry Funk stuff. Did I miss anything, Felix, or have we hit all the milestones?
No, I watched the exact same DVD set that you watched.
Yes! Perfect.
So, I think we are good with that. I mean, yeah. They kind of turn it from hating each other to, like, they still hate each other, but they respect each other in a way, or they respect the talent of each other. They don't respect each other, but they respect what the other can do in the ring. So they really put each other over as the other big wrestler in the world, actually.
Yes, yes.
But they kind of still hate the guts of each other. So it's getting on another level by now.
Funk does say there's a lot of things he hates about Ric Flair, but he likes that Flair respects the sport of professional wrestling the way that he does. I was going to ask you, Mark, had you ever seen this match before?
Yes, I have, actually. It is one that I have seen. It's been many a moon, many a moon. The irony is, it's like, I haven't seen any of the Flair Steamboat stuff, but I've seen pretty much all of the big I Quit matches from WCW of the 80s, because I saw Arn versus Tully as well.
Mm.
So I don't know why it was like, oh, that's like good wrestling for 30 minutes. No, I just want people punching each other.
Well, you're going to get a lot of that. A lot of punches, a lot of chops. Funk gives Flair the chance to quit before it even starts because he's a fair man. And Flair obviously doesn't take him up on this, or this episode would be very short. Funk takes a beating early. He bumps all over the place. He takes a swing at a fan. He threatens a photographer. And eventually gets the advantage back by escaping a choke by poking Flair in the eye. He's stomping all over Flair on the apron. And this is back in the day when the commentary desk was right up against the apron. And Tommy Young has to put his foot on top of Jim Ross's monitor so Flair doesn't bang his head on it when he's selling the stomps.
What I really like from Flair is that from the beginning, you kind of see that this is not typical Ric Flair. He's got his fists balled up, so he's prepared to fight. Not that he throws many punches, but he's got his fists balled up. He's straight. His posture's different. He's more aggressive, and he does a lot of choking. And that's kind of what I appreciate, is that he's doing it slightly differently. It's still Ric Flair, but it feels like this is a fight and not a match.
He's two things you don't, or didn't at this point, see a lot in Ric Flair. He's the babyface and he's a brawler.
Yeah.
Normally, he was the technical heel.
Mm.
Funk takes Flair up the aisle and gives him a couple of microphone-loaded punches before they get back into the ring. And he's maniacally yelling from the microphone while battering Ric in the corner. You egg-sucking dog, say it, say it.
Yeah.
Flair, of course, doesn't say it. Flair gets the briefest sliver of hope with a Manhattan drop, but it's too early on a backdrop and takes this like short neck breaker instead that I really like. So Funk's still holding onto the ropes with one arm and manages to grab Flair's head with the other and twist him over. I had to watch it twice because the first time around I didn't actually see what they did.
Yeah, I think it was very smart going for the neck breaker because it was so easy to tell the story with Flair's neck being hurt. So it only needed one move to create great drama already at that point. Because it was kind of in doubt if Flair could even come back at all after the pile driver on the table. So it's kind of like, will he stop wrestling? Can he go on? It only needs one big move to like re-injure him. So like he's already in danger, even though he beat Funk up for like multiple minutes beforehand.
Yeah, like Funk could have thrown 1,000 punches and not gone anywhere, but one move targeting that weak neck and he's suddenly in control.
One little touch from earlier. I really like that. I think I've grown to appreciate Tommy Young as a referee, but I really like his crossing guard style, one hand up and sort of asking the other guy to come in the ring. Like when someone's on the outside, it is literally like a crossing guard or a lollipop lady, and it just works.
Maybe that's what he did after wrestling. Maybe that's what he did before wrestling. Funk is paintbrushing Flair with slaps. And I had to rewind and listen for a gong because Flair stops this with a lightning-fast Undertaker throat grab. It was Undertaker 1992 Royal Rumble all over again.
Yeah. Just good.
Funk gets chopped out of the ring and now Flair is on top. He's punching and he's chopping and he's throwing Funk into the railings. Funk is asked if he wants to quit, but he, of course, refuses and gets the advantage back when Flair is distracted by Gary Hart taking possession of the branding iron, which I noted doesn't come into play at all after all the stuff he does on TV with it.
Yeah.
Terry gives Rick a swinging neck breaker and asks him, don't you remember what I did to your neck? Don't you want to quit before I hurt you?
Mm.
He gets Flair's head between his legs and instructs the ref to ask him if he quits before he pile drives him, and then just pile drives him anyway. Yeah. That weird handstand pile driver that Ric Flair seemed to only do with Terry Funk. I don't know. I don't understand why. And of all the people to not trust with a pile driver, Terry Funk.
Yeah.
I was kind of surprised it happened again, because obviously it happened on the pile driver on the table. I kind of understand that this is a weird position to be for a pile driver. Mm. But here I was like, why?
Yeah.
At this point, really?
Yeah.
I like that Tommy Young was almost interviewing Ric Flair in the setup for this.
I had a mouthful of water when you said that.
I think the audio part, actually having the microphone in the ring, is actually adding to the match, because you can hear them both. You can hear Tommy Young, you can hear them both. I think it's kind of like being in the ring. Like, of course, a lot of the camera shots as well were really close up, so it gets a totally different feel than a regular match.
I think the counterpoint to that, though, is the Bret Hart Bob Backlund I Quit match with Roddy Piper holding the mic going, what do you say? What do you say? Every 5 seconds. Just horrible.
I mean, Tommy Young is not Roddy Piper, and there are many, many positives for that.
Yes, true. Funk batters Flair's neck over and over, and he's telling him to quit and telling him to quit. And because Flair won't, he drags him outside and hits the pile driver again on the particle board floor. Jim Ross makes a point of saying, we're in an ice arena here. There's ice underneath that. That's just wood. That's particle board over ice.
I really like the bit where Funk literally had Flair's neck trapped between his thighs.
Mm.
And he's like just got him trapped there, and Flair is trying to fight, and Funk's just, well, of course you can't escape because you're next week. And it's just a really nice little touch, and it's something you don't really see.
Not a nice little touch that I didn't expect to see was Gary Hart just wandering over to Gordon Solie at the commentary desk and having like a non-kayfabe chat with him in the middle of a live TV main event.
Yeah.
Like, Jim Ross carries on and these two are just having a chinwagon looking at the notes. I had forgotten he was on commentary for this. Like, in my head, this is Ross and Caudle.
Mm.
But no, it is Gordon Solie, the least interesting commentator in the history of professional wrestling.
And past his prime.
Even in 1989, yes. Like, this isn't the right style for him, is it? Like, Gordon Solie is men on the mat exchanging holds. That's where he excels.
Yeah.
Like, brawling, fighting, angles, that's not for him.
No, it's rather Jack Briscoe and Dory Funk racing in Florida. That's rather what he describes and gets over than this one. But I think JR was really good at this point.
Oh,
like the whole year, Jim Ross is really good.
Throughout the whole build, actually, like him as Funk's interviewer throughout all this stuff, him doing the commentary on the TV matches. There was a lovely surprise appearance from Lance Russell on a couple of I think on both the Scott Hall matches, it's Lance Russell and Bob Caudle as commentators. And I love Lance Russell. He's so much fun. Although he's most fun, obviously, in the Memphis studio.
Mm.
Hey, come on now, Jerry, calm down. Funk slams Flair on a table, but him moving it around the ring to reset it is the recovery time. Flair needs to come back with chops and run Funk's head into the table. Flair sets the thing up and then from off camera leaps onto Funk's back and flattens him against the railings. Like, this is wild, desperate Ric Flair, like the kind you don't normally see.
Yeah.
What followed then is for me the physical highlight of this match. Flair throws Funk headlong at the table and he slides all the way down it on his belly like it's a Western saloon bar. And then as the far end legs collapse, he hits his head on the seat of an open chair as he comes off and manages to fold up the chair and end up underneath it. God tier S rank bumping. Phenomenal stuff. And nobody else could do this ever. And make it work. It's so good. Both of my viewings, I rewound this and watched it at least 5 times. Like, looking for more and more details, like seeing if he'd managed to do anything else to himself. It's brilliant.
Yeah, I think that makes Terry stand out so much that it's never really the same movement, the same bumps. It's always something. I mean, right when they started the first bump to the outside, you already knew something's going to happen with the big bump. And yeah, I think that's why his brawling stands out so much. It's not about how he hits his opponents or like how he's getting hit. It's basically yes. standing out even more. Like.
Mm.
And what I kind of appreciate, because I'm remembering back to when we did the Terry Funk versus Anita match, which was 4 years after this.
Mm.
And again, as you said, Felix, I don't remember Funk's bumps from that being the same as his bumps from this. It was, he's got this great selling style of it's really exaggerated, but he knows how to tweak it in ways that he needs to for the type of match. He knows how to sell and he knows what makes sense.
He never makes his opponent look foolish.
Yeah.
He never makes pro wrestling look foolish as an art form, but he is quite happy to make himself look like the
yes.
biggest idiot in the world, but still look dangerous.
Yeah. At one point he was like, I can't remember what it was, but he was like selling, waddling along like a Snoopy dance walk kind of thing. But it made perfect sense.
Yes. Yeah. Gary Hart takes a couple of licks for getting in the way, and I don't think he was very happy about this because he doesn't really sell him. He just goes to complain to the referee about getting hit by Ric Flair. Funk gets dropped balls first on the guardrail and kind of melts off it backwards like he's jelly getting dropped through a grate in the floor. back inside, it's Flair's turn to punish Funk's leg. And for good measure, Flair throws some punches, and for each one, Funk does a 360 spin. Not a Rikishi bump, but like on one leg, he just does a pirouette and comes around to take the next one. Tremendous. Funk tries to limp and hop away up the aisle, but Flair brings him down with another diving backpack tackle. And suplexes him back into the ring.
I think at that point, he kind of almost, when they were still in the ring, he kind of felt almost sorry for Terry because he got
yes.
beaten up so badly by Flair. And the moment you feel sympathy for him, he just walks away. The iron wants to run away. So he kind of, okay, he's losing all sympathy again. So it's like kind of the moment you think they could turn the tide, really, like, no, Terry just runs away from Flair.
He knows how to keep himself heel while showing enough arse and giving Flair enough control.
Yeah, it's enough vulnerability that there might be some people in the crowd who feel sorry for him, but the majority are like, he's finally getting his.
Yeah.
It's an incredible fine line to walk. He does get one tiny last bit of offense when he manages to get a thumb in Rick's eye to prevent the figure four, but he gets suplexed onto the apron. He's trying to swing wild punches and can't connect with any of them, but Flair hits every chop in retaliation.
Yeah.
And then drops him and puts on the figure four, which according to Soli, puts pressure on five different points. So add that to the figure four discussion we sparked a few weeks ago.
One of the things before the figure four, and this again, this is incredible detail, is that when Funk is trying to fight off Flair, he is holding the ropes. He's like, his leg is hurt so much, he needs to hold on to the rope while he's fighting.
Mm.
And it's just a great logical touch, which also explains why is this man who's been limping badly trading punches? It's because he's got the help of the ropes. Mm. So you don't have that kind of, well, why is his leg not hurt now while he's punching? Mm. Oh, that's why.
And they're not doing like the 20-minute leg work like in some other Flair matches. It's just getting long and long and long. They're just hitting, or Flair's hitting the big stuff right away, and Terry's like getting like, I mean, it's just like 2 minutes. Like it's from the first attack to the leg. It's a good pacing to get to the figure four instead of some of Flair's big title matches where he's needing like a lot of time to set it up. So.
Yeah. Tommy Young is in there with the mic, and Funk goes from no, I'll never quit to oh my god, my leg is breaking to I quit, and the crowd goes crazy. I mean, just quickly after the match, Gary Hart is incensed because Funk had promised him on TV that he would not give up. Funk though pushes him out of the way to keep his word and shakes Ric Flair's hand. I'm going to go first just so I can get the adrenaline out of my system. I nominated this match without hesitation when this project came up, and I feel fully justified in doing so. Rewatching it again has cemented it as one of my all-time favorite matches. I was going to complain that if Flair was going to win anyway, why make it non-title? But they make even that make sense. Funk has been so wild and crazy, and as we talked about, he's lost all of his big televised matches, so he doesn't hold a top 10 ranking anymore, so he's not worth a title shot. He's been such an idiot with the plastic bag attack that he's not going to get one again anyway.
Yeah.
This, like, so like the same actions that got Flair's attention in May have cost him what he initially wanted, but he's so full of pride and can't back out of the situation he's created, he's got to go through with this, even though he's not going to get the title belt that he wanted in the first place, even if he wins. And for Flair's part, this is his chance to legally do whatever he wants to the man who put him out.
Yeah.
And if he beats him, put a pin in that pride and burst it. The match itself, I think, is a masterpiece of knowing what to do and when to do it. It's a wild bar fight of a match. If you take out the table spot and Funk having a mic in his hand for two punches, has no weapon work in it at all. Mm. It's all wrestling-style brawling. As we said, Funk doesn't even go for the branding iron, which he's been building up for like 2 months on TV by bloodying Sting and hitting jobbers. I don't want to take anything away from Ric Flair, but Funk in this match puts on one of the singular best performances I think I've ever seen out of a wrestler. He comes off as dangerous and unhinged, but skillful. He bumps all over the place to show you the technical wrestler he's in there with can also beat him in a brawl. Mm. He's the overconfident coward who realizes he's bitten off more than he can chew and tries to flee. But in the end, he comes out an honorable man of his word, and he makes all of this work. And on top of that, for these 6 months in 1989, doing the build up to this, if he's not the best wrestler in the world, and he'd have a strong case for it, he's certainly the best thing in American TV wrestling. I love this. All of it. The build, the match, the works. I'm going to shut up so our guest can speak. Felix, how do you feel about this whole thing?
I mean, I still loved it. I loved the Great American Bash match, which I saw years before the I Quit match, I think, because I got the whole Great American Bash show, which is, I think, one of the best shows ever. Mm. So it's kind of like we're talking about matches that are not happening at Great American Bash, but multiple other matches in 89. But actually, we never talked about the best show, which was Great American Bash, I think. Mm. But I think leading up to this match, all the promos we talked about, you get so hyped up. You see the crowd is really excited. They were excited for the cage match, even though the cage match wasn't great, but fans were standing like all the time during the match. So the fans were really hot throughout the whole program. It wasn't too long. It was just a few months actually that recovered. And I think it's great. And I love the intensity. It's like you said, it's a wrestling brawl. It's high intensity. It's wild and brutal, but it's not bloody. It's not weapons. It's still wrestling, but you kind of see like these two, they don't like each other and they needed to prove a point. Mm. And when the point is proven, Terry put Flair over. I mean, if Terry Funk can cry and shout, "I quit," and shake his opponent's hand in the end, like, He couldn't do even any more to get this over, I think. I mean, or help Flair get more over. I mean, it's the least. He didn't do anything for himself there. I think it was all about trying to make the program work, getting the match work. Yeah, so that's, I think it's tremendous work from Terry. But I think it's also like, of course, Flair hang with him. Like, he really brought the strikes as well. Mm. So they, the intensity from Flair was tremendous as well. I think just staying on Terry. So I think it's one of the best wrestling brawls out there. For me, it's on par with the Great American Bash match. Mm. This one might be the better one, but it's always like the emotional, which if you've seen first, how you feel more connected to a match. I think the whole program, it's just beautiful.
Mm. Mark, how about you?
I'm in a rare position. I am the low man.
Really?
I'm not that low, but I am the low man. And there's a reason why I'm the low man.
Sure.
There's a lot of really good stuff in this. I appreciate how Flair wrestles this to make it feel different in terms of there's desperation, there's choking. He's wrestling like the face, but also he's still aggressive. It's that Ricky Steamboat thing where Ricky Steamboat was not a passive face. Mm. Ricky Steamboat was an aggressive face in the series against Flair. And it almost feels like Funk is taking some of those elements and doing that. Terry Funk, yeah, it's absolute masterclass from him. Him with a microphone is great. His selling's great. There's lots of details here that you'd like to see people take in wrestling, because a lot of the details are about making this make sense and making it work.
Yes.
Funk is selling his ass off with the legwork in the 2 minutes leading up to the figure four. He's like doing everything. But at no point do you actually think, well, hold on, he stopped selling the leg to get his offense in because he's using the ropes. It's great stuff. For me, the main problem is, well, one of the issues is that I'm comparing it to other matches that are a lot more violent.
Sure. So I want to jump in quickly. I think the reason they don't do blood in this is because it's a Clash match and it's on free TV. Yeah, all the pay-per-view matches, Flair's been bleeding all over the place.
I had a suspicion that was why this was more colourless.
Yes.
So it's a little bit, you know, it didn't feel like it had the violence I thought it would for like a feud ender. And the other thing is, there was just something about the finish. I get it. It's Ric Flair. He's targeting the leg. Funk does a great job of selling, getting it over. Great. But it's someone in a figure four for 30 seconds. And while he's flailing away, he's not trying to get to the ropes. Funk does a great job, but it's kind of, it just feels like it's missing. It just feels a little bit too much like a normal end of a Flair match to me.
Okay.
Bear in mind, and this is what I said, why there's a reason. I'm someone whose first I quit matches were those WWE, they're starting to get really tropey.
Right.
You know, 2000 WWE onwards is like my first introductions. So sure. I'm kind of used to when WWE were like, okay, what stupid set piece can we have for a last man standing? What threat can we have for an I quit match? And also, I'm comparing this to Tully versus Magnum, which is a very different beast, is wrestled as a very different beast. But the finish to that was perfect for that match.
Yeah.
With the threatening to gouge out the eye and the face turning the heel's weapon on it. So this is a great match. And I can 100% with the build, if you put the build with everything, I can get why it's must see. It's just that there's other things from this decade in this era that I would recommend over this. But that's my personal taste. I can still see all the positives. But put it this way. If I had to pick one of Tully versus Magnum or this, I'm picking Tully versus Magnum.
That's difficult because I don't know if I could slide anything between them. Like they're both different things, but they're both excellent. And in my mind, they are both like must see matches.
And I get I'm being very unfair in comparing it to Tully versus Magnum, because that's just a match that just stands out amongst almost everything.
Sure. This is, of course, 5 stars in the Wrestling Observer. 9.08 currently on Cage Match. Ric Flair was the 1989 Wrestler of the Year. Terry Funk came third. He was also most outstanding. Funk came fourth. Funk was voted best heel, best brawler, best on interviews. Flair versus Funk was feud of the year, edging out Flair versus Steamboat by just 9 votes. Yes. This show came fourth in Best Major Card, and this match came fourth in the Observer Match of the Year behind the 3 Flair versus Steamboat matches. And in a long retired category that I don't recall ever seeing before, Terry Funk was named by Wrestling Observer readers in 1989 the hardest worker of 1989.
I didn't know that existed.
Oh, it doesn't anymore. This is the first time I remember seeing it.
So I was thinking this is our last match from the 1980s. We are now done with the 80s. We've got 20 matches left. And you can argue maybe that shows a little bit of recency bias with considering how the 80s are remembered. So I was thinking, and this is a question for both you guys, what 80s matches that we've covered on the podcast are your favourites?
I mean, it might be recency bias, but this is up there.
Yeah.
in a terrible dated reference, the last great rock song of the 80s was Poison by Alice Cooper, which was released in July 1989. This is the last great rock match of the 80s, November 15th, 1989. It would have to be this. It would have to be the Magnum versus Tully cage match. Mm. And I kind of have to leave aside the Flair versus Steamboat trilogy. In terms of, because if we're talking favorite, we're not talking, I can see Felix's face. We're not necessarily talking best, we're talking favorite. And it's not necessarily the match, the bell-to-bell match. The entire presentation of the Chikasen Nagayo versus Dump Matsumoto hair versus hair match, that half hour of mayhem will live long in the memory, I think. And as like, if you took it as like a half hour episode of something, I love that. I've gone back and watched it again since we did the show, and it's still tremendous. I also rewatched today the Masakatsu Funaki versus Tatsuya Nakano UWF match.
Yeah.
One man trying to murder another man. And that didn't give me the same rush as it did the first time I watched it.
Was that the surprise value, the shock value?
Yeah, maybe
value
you might be right. The surprise value is gone. I think I'm going to stop waffling, and I think I'm going to pick three. Sorry, it's going to be the hair versus hair match. It's going to be the two I quit matches that we've covered.
I think I have to go with the match I originally nominated and I was on last year, which is the final Flair Steamboat match, because it kind of like fits in. It's with the angle, like it's a complete package. Yeah. So it's kind of like some funk in there, like because he was the judge, he was there the whole time. So I think it's kind of bonds it together in a certain way. But I think that's my favorite match, and probably the match I watched most times out of all of them. But I think like putting them both together, like finishing the Steamboat series, going right into funk. So it's kind of like these two together. I think that NWA main event they did in 89, even though the lower cards weren't as great anymore as the years prior, but I think the main events in NWA and the TV they did is just some of the best. But if it comes down to one match, I think it's the Steamboat Flair Wrestle War match with the post-match angle.
I went for two.
Mm-hmm.
And unsurprisingly, I promise I'm not this bloodthirsty normally, but it's Magnum Tully and Chikasen Matsumoto. And part of that is the Flair Steamboat stuff is, you know, all three matches are great, and I think I called all of them must-see. The problem is, in my mind, they kind of blur a little.
Yeah, I understand
and
that.
And it's that if you... I can maybe... Bear in mind, I've only seen them twice each. Mm. I can maybe pick out, like, okay, this was in this one, this was in that one. Mm. But the problem is when you have three things that are incredibly good, I think it kind of hurts them, whereas having one thing on its own that's just very distinctly different just helps stand out in my memory. Mm. And as I say, I'm a bit of an emotional wrestling fan, and someone trying to gouge someone's eyes out or... Dump Matsumoto being an absolute nightmare just sticks in my memory. And that was a thing that I found in must-see matches. I think most of the must-see matches are matches that stick in people's memories for one reason or another.
So, if we've covered everything we need to on the subject of Ric Flair versus Terry Funk, Felix, I would like to thank you so much for coming back and doing another show with us. The floor is yours to tell people where you can be found on the internet if you want to be found. Plug your wrestling company, plug everything.
Yeah, I'm so happy I could be a part of this, especially because it was the Terry Funk episode. I knew it was the only one you had coming. So, like, of course, I love Terry. I had the chance to work him WXW once. He was also the guy I got my first interview. I worked for a wrestling magazine. I got to interview Terry Funk when I was 19 years old. So that was... It's amazing. So it's kind of like, this is like a special one for me that I got to do the Terry Funk episode. So I really appreciate that I had the chance to be on here. I mean, on Twitter, I'm Felix Kronenberg, so not too hard to find. It's just my full name. Follow me. It doesn't hurt because I never tweet bad stuff because there's so much negativity on social media already. So whenever I throw something out, it's something positive, I think, at least. It's mainly about wrestling. Yeah, and if you like wrestling, that's a little bit similar to this. At least we are trying to do, following WXW in Germany, we are trying to have some of the old school feeling there and trying to pretend wrestling fans are not stupid and they can follow storylines and they can question behind, and it's a real sport. So give it a try if you want to.
Tremendous. As for us, you can go to linktr.ee/mustseematches for all the ways to subscribe, links to the full list of nominations and a whole load more. We are at Must See Matches on Twitter, Instagram, Threads and Blue Sky. We have a Discord, bit.ly/mustseematchesdiscord. I am at Kieran Edits on Twitter and Mark is
at Monkey_Buckles.
I have a second show, Nothing and Like It, chronicling the UK's Frontier Wrestling Alliance's adventures on television, including eventually the stuff that I made, and we're going to tear that apart. You can find everything to do with that at linktr.ee/fwapod. Next week is our Christmas episode, and what a gift it will be for all. We complete our set and catch all of the grapple Pokemon, so Benno will be here to discuss what else. Samoa Joe versus Kenta Kobashi from October the 1st, 2005. And I don't know if you know this, he was there. Thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.